ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
अंकार
अंकार
बहिष
बहिष
शलोकम
शलोकम
त्रिं
त्रिं
पर्येम्यस्कान्
पर्येम्यस्कान्
इताव्रता अनुग्रहान
अनुग्रहान
महा
विष्णुर
विष्णुर
अविघाता
गति
गति
क्वचित
क्वचित
अंतर्बहिश्च लोकं स्त्रीं
अंतर्बहिश्च लोकं स्त्रीं
पर्येम्यस्कन्दितव्रता अनुग्रहान् महाविष्णुर्
अनुग्रहान् महाविष्णुर्
अविघात गति क्वचित्
अविघात गति क्वचित्
अन्तः
अन्तः
इन् द ट्रान्सेंडेंटल वर्ल्ड
बाहि
बाहि In the material world.
In the material world.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
Lokan.
Lokan.
Planets.
Green.
Green.
Three divisions.
Three divisions. Arayemi.
Arayemi. Travel.
Travel.
Askandita.
Askandita.
Unbroken.
Unbroken.
Vrata.
Vrata.
Vow.
Vow.
Anugrahat.
Anugrahat.
By the causeless mercy. Mahavishnu,
Mahavishnu
of the Mahavishnu, Karana Dakshay Vishnu, Avigata without restriction, Gati
entrance,
Vachit at any time. Translation. Since then, by the grace of the Almighty Vishnu, I travel everywhere without restriction, both in the transcendental world and in the three divisions of the material world. This is because I am fixed in unbroken devotional service, in unbroken devotional service of the Lord. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there are three divisions of the material spheres, namely Urdhva Loka, topmost planets, Madhya Loka, midway planets, and Adho Loka, downward planets. Beyond the Urdhva planets, that is to say, above the Brahma Loka, are the material coverings of the universe, and above that is the spiritual sky, which is unlimited in expansion, containing unlimited self-illuminating Vaikuntha planets inhabited by God Himself, along with His associates, who are all eternally liberated living entities. Sri Narad Muni could enter all these planets in both the material and spiritual spheres without restriction, as much as the Almighty Lord is free to move personally in any part of His creation. In the material world, living beings are influenced by the three material modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. But since Narad Muni is transcendental to all these material modes, and thus he can travel everywhere unrestricted, he is a liberated spaceman. The causeless mercy of Lord Vishnu is unparalleled, and such mercy is perceived by the devotees only by the grace of the Lord. Therefore, the devotees never fall down, but the materialists, in other words, the fruitive workers and the speculative philosophers, do fall down, being forced by their respective modes of nature. The rishis are above mentioned. The rishis, as above mentioned, cannot enter into the transcendental world like Narada. This fact is disclosed in the Narasimha Purana. Like Marichi, rishis like Marichi are authorities in fruitive work, and rishis like Sanaka and Sanatana are authorities in philosophical speculations. But Sri Narad Muni is the prime authority for transcendental devotional service of the Lord. All the great authorities in the devotional service of the Lord follow in the footsteps of Narad Muni, and in the order of the Narada Bhakti Sutra. And therefore, all the devotees of the Lord are unhesitatingly qualified to enter into the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha. So, here in Narad Muni, it's being pointed out that he has come to the transcendental platform. And being on that transcendental platform, then he He is able to travel everywhere in the spiritual and material world because he is not conditioned. This is the main principle. One is conditioned, then one is restricted. One is not conditioned, one is unrestricted. This is the principle. It's like you bring us to the edge of some high precipice, and we will be afraid. Or if we're not afraid, at least we'll be afraid if we fall off. Right? Because for us, then the concept is there's the effect of gravity, and the gravitational force will take us down, and from that, then we will get, you know, crushed at the bottom. Bird's not afraid because it can fly, because it thinks, I can fly. But if it somehow or another can't fly, then it'll also be afraid. Right? So the person who is transcendental is not restricted by the material energy. So they're not under the influence of these forces. So they don't have to worry about gravity. They don't have to worry about time and space. Right? That's not within their purview. So if there's no time and no space, you can move from one place to the other without difficulty. Right? It's because we have the concept of space that there's a difference. You see something over some place, and you can reach your hand and you can touch it. Right? You can see your eye and the thing, and they're touching. But there's, because of the concept of space, you can't touch it. And time, there's that distance. Right? So does that make some sense? In the spiritual world, you don't have that. You see it, you just take it. So, therefore, because they're not conditioned by this. Now, as long as there's... Now, the thing in here, we could say, okay, by practice, we can get rid of this. We can get rid of some of this, but you can't get out of the material world. You may be able to move freely within the material world, like the siddhas. They can move in the material world, like that. So, there's no problem. Because there's no problem. But they can't move outside the material world. So that point is made. So the karmis and the jnanis, they cannot get outside the material world. They are stuck to the material world. So because of that, they can't leave. So even if they can travel freely within, they can go beyond certain restrictions that, let's say, on earth that we are restricted by because of their consciousness. But still, they can't get out of the material energy. They're still restricted by that. That remains. So this principle, then, is very important. As long as we are affected by karma and jnana, that means we also will not go out of the material existence. We will have to remain within it. Though a great personality is here, sons of Brahma, Marichi, and who was the other who was mentioned? Marichi. Oh, just like Marichi, okay. Then they're authorities in the fruit of, in the Karmakanda. They're expert. They know how it works. Daksha is also expert at this. But they stay. He's not a rishi, but they stay in the material world. Sanatan and Sanaka, they're expert in the process of speculation. On speculation here meaning Vedic speculation is different than modern speculation. That has to be understood. Modern speculation means is you don't have any... It's what you're dealing with is pratyaksha, or observation. What is perceived from the five senses. Then you will take that, and according to whatever is your system to use that, then you will analyze that, and you will come up with varieties on that. You will try to break those apart or connect them together in ways that fit what you're trying to do with it. Right? If you're trying to put together music or put together art or put together physics or put together chemistry or architecture, you take what you've seen and you put it together. You have an arch, okay. Then you have a single arch, and then you see, okay, you can put a line of arches. Or you could put those arches together and make three arches. Or, you know, like that. And they still have a common thing. Or you can take out the columns in the middle. You can do different things. So that's speculating on something that you've seen. Right? You come up with newer and newer things. So it's an applied thing. But your authority, you've heard, I mean, your source is the senses. This is the difficulty, right? So, but the Vedic means the source is the scriptures, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Then taking what Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra says, you take that and put it together in various combinations and permutations to affect it into your life, in practical life. You know, you hear about, we're not this body. Okay, but now you can apply that, well, okay, I'm not this body, then that person's not their body. Right? But then other people are not their body, and everything's not their body. You know, you just expand it. Though it hasn't been specifically stated, but you're using that process. Right? So now if that process, and that's the process of jnana. Does that make some sense? The other, when it's based on the senses, that's the process of karma. Right? But even the Vedic karma is based on the scriptures. Right? The scriptures say that you should do something in a certain way. Then you take that and you make combinations and permutations. So when it's based on authority, that's the Vedic principle. When it's based on your own speculation, you're speculating on your speculation. Right? Then it gets more weird. It works, but it's more strange. You know, just like, let's say, a modern application, you have I think what's called futures, right, in the stock market. Futures means you have a goods that actually exists. Okay, you buy futures in corn, right, and you buy 5,000 tons of corn. And you buy it today, and you're going to sell it after 3 months. So you speculate what the price will be in 3 months. So you sell it to someone today for the 3 months price. Right? Because he wants to do it, and then he'll sell it to someone else. Everyone's trying to make money off what it could be. So there's the speculation. But the goods you're dealing with are real. Right? So if you don't sell it in 3 months, then they come knocking on your door and say, where do you want your 5,000 tons of corn delivered? Right? But it's real. But nowadays you have a market that's based off of all the markets together. Right? You take the top 30 markets or the top 50 stocks. That's an index. And so, but the index is just moving. It doesn't have any goods behind it directly. Right? So therefore, then it's a speculation on a speculation. Right? And then they take it even further. Then they even take it into other things, that other areas where you're speculating on the expansion of that, down to where you speculate on, okay, we'll sell stocks on, Amitabh Bachchan. You know, or you take some big celebrity. And if he's popular, his stock goes up. If he's not popular, his stock goes down. But you're not buying and selling him. It's completely separate. It has nothing to do with him. You just made it up. People are willing to go with it. Hey, okay. You know, it's like betting. Okay, you know, you sit down, two guys. Okay, which fly will fly off first? Okay, I say the guy on the right, you know. You know, there's no importance to it. You speculate on it. But the flies are there. But then you take it, remove it from there, and then it becomes more speculative. But as long as people agree with it, it flies. You know, like Vedas say, these are clothes, right? What you're wearing now, this is clothes. But you can then, if everybody agrees that these are not clothes and something else is clothes, then that will be accepted as clothes. Right? So within this, you can take the cheddar, put it on so many ways, the dota so many ways, the sari so many ways. You can, but this speculate on different ways to do, but they're all within tradition. Right? You've seen this dhoti with that cheddar. And then you see somebody else who doesn't wear that kind of dhoti, but a different way of cheddar. And then you put that cheddar with this dhoti. So that's speculation. But it's based on tradition. It's based on authority. So therefore, it will still be accepted as Vedic. Yeah. So that's the difference. It's still considered pious. It's still uplifting. While the other is not. Speculation that's not based on the armchair speculator, the modern academics, is not uplifting. It may develop their power of focus, of thought and memory, but their character is not necessarily uplifted in any way, shape, or form. like that. It's a common. It's. I mean, those who deal in the field know that it's pretty grungy in those, especially when you get into the hard sciences. Very, very grungy people as far as when it comes to sensuality and stuff. You know, the nerds are not very good at it. They're not very refined, but they're just like their consciousness is fixed in matter. So their senses are also. So very gross. So they're not uplifted by their mental speculation. While we see Sanaka and Sanatan, they are uplifted to the Brahman platform. That's the difference, is that mental speculation on the Vedic within the parameters of the tradition will get you to the Brahman platform. So as long as it is speculative, as long as it's speculative without Krishna, then it's called jnana. If it's with Krishna, then it's called bhakti. Right? Then it's jnana yoga. Does this make sense? Because the point is you're trying to, we are attached to the material energy. So then we read in Gita about the three modes of the material nature. So we try to apply it in everything in our life. That's jnana. But because we're doing it to please Krishna, that's jnana yoga. So it leads us towards liberation, but that direction towards liberation is also towards bhakti. So two things are happening at once. We're being liberated by that process of jnana, and we're developing devotion because it's being used in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? It's the same with karma. Karma, if it's followed according to the Vedas, is also uplifting. Right? So therefore, our activities are used in the Lord's service. So a dual effect is there. You're getting the results of the karma, and you're getting moving towards bhakti. And when you use all of them, then you have an activity through which you understand the workings of the material world that liberates you, then brings you towards bhakti. Right? Because if we said, okay, one could say, okay, well, we can just, well, why bother with the karma? Then but that means you have to be able to sit down and just bother with jnana. That means that's all you think 24/7. You don't think something else. You don't do anything else. So who can do that? Right? Nobody. Right? Very few. The four Kumaras, they're doing it. Right? But they wouldn't be socially very acceptable, right? You know, big conference, big world, you know, academic conference, and four, five-year-old naked kids walk in, right? Everybody else is in their three-piece suits. It might not work, right? So, how do we get into that? So the principle is that the Vedic culture then is to elevate. But even then, it's pointed out that it itself has its limits. Without bhakti, it is also limited. Therefore, you're stuck within the material world. That's the point. So Narad Muni is not conditioned by karma or jnana. He has no desire in karma. He has no desire in jnana. He has no property in these fields. Right? So therefore, he has nothing to enjoy from these fields. So therefore, he's not bound by them. As soon as you have it, you're bound by it. Right? You may say, no, I'm independent. Right? Oh, the devotees, they have nothing. They're not independent. I have money, I have facility, I have a house here, I have a house in Europe, I have a house there, I have money, I have bank accounts, I'm free. No, you're bound. You have to stay in your house. You have to maintain that house. You have to deal with that house. You have to tell others that you have that house. At least somebody else. Right? There has to be at least one person who appreciates how fortunate you are that you have a house on every continent. Right? You have a car. You have to maintain it. You know? It can only do what it can do. You're walking. You just walk straight through the park. You have a car. You have to drive around. You're limited by the item. As soon as you're attached to it, you're limited by it. So if you're attached to matter, you're limited by matter. If you're unattached to matter, you're not limited by matter. You're attached to speculation, you're limited by speculation. Because then you can only go as much as the intelligence. And intelligence is controlled by time and space.
Right? That's how intelligence works. It breaks things down. That's why you see, you know, hardcore science is physics, which is based on math, which is time and space. That's the whole thing. Calculating time and space. So then you're bound by it. You're bound to time and space. But if you're beyond time and space, you have nothing to gain by it. And you have nothing to gain by sense enjoyment or by controlling time and space. Then you're not in the material world. That's the principle. Then you're liberated. You're out. You're not within the material sphere. So that is Narad Muni's position, is by his devotional service, then he's become freed. And that's the whole point to point out, is therefore, he's not bound by the two brahmas, or the two illusions that every living entity is. The illusion that the material world is eternal, and is a place of happiness. Right? Every conditioned soul is bound by these two illusions. They think the material world is eternal, ananda brahma, and they think it is full of happiness, Vaikuntha brahma. Right? But it's not. It's not eternal. And it's not full of happiness. Therefore, adukalaya shashvatam. It's temporary, full of misery. It's always pointed out these two. They say, I've heard it. Okay, we've heard it. And we realized it. When we realize it, we're free. So everything in our philosophy that's dealing with the workings, mechanical workings of material energy, or anarthas, will come back to these two points. Everything will come back to these two points. We think this is a place that's eternal, and it's a place of happiness. In other words, we think we are the controller, and we are the enjoyer. It always will come back to those two. Anything will come back to that. So then the point is we're the controller, the enjoyer, or it's eternal and full of happiness, then we perform activities here, you know, with great enthusiasm to enjoy. You're going to be here eternally, you work hard. Right? Isn't it? You know, the man is there, he wants to do this, that, so many things. If you say you're going to die, you know, tomorrow, then he kind of like gives up his 5-year plan, his 20-year plan. They kind of disappear. Then he works for what's going to happen now, like that. So this is the point, is that as long as you think I'm here eternally, you work very, very hard. That's why in the Vedas it says, perform your economic development as if you're going to live forever, but perform your spiritual life as if you're going to die at any moment. Right? Because spiritual life you take seriously if the material world is not for us, it is not tangible for us, it's not attainable for us. Right? So that principle then is, as long as we think that it's there, then we're conditioned here. As long as we understand I'm Krishna's servant, I'm not the controller. So this place is temporary, the spiritual world is eternal. Krishna is the enjoyer, I'm not the enjoyer. Then our activities will be spiritual. Right, we see? Right? If we're faced with death, which is considered misery, we turn to spiritual life. If we're faced with long, healthy life with all material facilities and opportunity to enjoy, generally the activities one will take up will be material. Does that make sense? So all you have to do is fix two and the third one follows. You fix the sambandha and the prayojana, abhideya follows. Right? You fix, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, then I am going to control material energy and enjoy it. If I am the servant and I am not the enjoyer, God's the enjoyer, then I'm going to take material energy and use it for Krishna. Does that make sense? That's why everything comes back to these two. And that means you're either doing spiritual activities or material activities. So spiritual activities means the two are, I'm Krishna's servant, he's the enjoyer. And a material activity means I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Right? Does that make some sense? So that's the technicality of how it functions. So Narad Muni is not bound by these, therefore he's not stuck in the material world. That's the simplicity of it. If those can be removed, you're out. You know? So that's meaning the point that's being made here. And that's because it is devotion. Because it is devotion to Krishna, he's not interested in the material energies. He's not interested in controlling and enjoying the material energy. Therefore, he's not bound by it. So the devotee, as he becomes freed from the desire to control and enjoy the material energy, he's freed from that. Right? If we're bound by position, then that, I mean, if we're interested in position, then we're bound by position and politics and those things. Right? Then we have to gain to be happy, and loss will be our unhappiness. If we're not bound by it, then we have a position, then we use it for Krishna. We don't have a position, we still serve Krishna. Right? Then we're free. Because right? We're not bound by it. We're not bound by the dictates of it. Does that make some sense? So the Prabhupada says is that therefore those who follow in the steps of Narad Muni, they follow this Narad Bhakti Sutra, which means devotional service. Because that devotional service is there, then they are qualified to go back to Godhead. Follow devotional service means, and those two points have to be corrected. I am the servant, I am not the enjoyer. Right? To be situated in devotion, those two are there. To that degree that those are done, to that degree devotional service manifests. Like we're very much in a selfless mood of service, then that we find we make the most advancement by, the devotees are most pleased with, we are the most satisfied, right? We get the most realizations from. And then other activities where attachment is more, then progress is slower. Right? So that's the thing. You focus, therefore, on devotional service. To do devotional service, then you have to correct those other two, the controlling and enjoying offenses. Those are corrected, you have devotional service. They're not corrected, then there is that much mix of the material activity. Right? These two are corrected for some degree, so that degree then is devotional. And to that degree that it's not, that's still material. Right? In other words, these two are side by side and they have different activities. Right? So as you're more on the one, then the activity is more spiritual. Does that make some sense? But the wonderful part about it is the part that is spiritual is eternal. And the part that's material, that's temporary. So that temporariness means on two levels. One is that it's temporary what you'll be able to get from it anyway. And two, it's temporary means it's destined to disappear anyway. Material life means it has to go away. Material life is temporary. Material world is temporary. So that means our material consciousness one day has to go away. So that gives us hope. We can move forward. Right? So that element then, that material consciousness we may have, this attachment we may have, those can go away. So if we stick to devotional service, then they will go away. Because as that devotion increases, that means material has to decrease. They both can't stay at the same time. Okay. So if that focus is there on serving Krishna, then our attitude, our identity as Krishna's servant and as the assistant to his pleasure, then start to become manifest. Right? That's the second stage of Bhav Sadhana. That begins from when you take up devotional service. Right? Is the first stage is Shravandas, which means I hear, I am servant of Krishna. So that means it starts from when you first understand, yes, I'm servant of Krishna, but I'm still all these other things. I'm still a cool dude, right? You know? So, but slowly, slowly the cool dude goes away and the devotee of Krishna stays. Until it manifests as a spiritual body. Right? Varnadas is that process of adjusting with it. I have heard I am servant of Krishna, but I'm not quite adjusted with it. Okay, I'm servant of Krishna here, But when I put on my duds, go out on the street, and that, then, you know, I'm a cool dude again. You know? And then, and with time, then we start to see, no, I'm not. You know, there's cooler duties. And if you keep going up, then you come up to Krishna, who's the coolest duty. So, you know, therefore, that service to Krishna, then we slowly start to identify with that. We've heard it, we know it, but that identity or acceptance of it, that's Varnadas. So that matures when we have accepted our spiritual form and are able to function within it. Right? That Smarandas means now we remember Krishna here and there when our other identity is not prominent. As our spiritual identity, identification is prominent, then we're remembering Krishna. So then gradually that becomes to the point of complete. It's full. And being full, then we are perfectly situated in our transcendental form. Like that, like we see Narad Muni is. Like that. So it's that process is an ongoing process. Any questions or comments?
Prabhupada once mentioned that Narad Muni cannot be the other form than some special places. And he has mentioned that he can go anywhere in three worlds and also in the
means Narad Muni. Prabhupada says Narad Muni can't go to Radhakund.
Yeah,
in a few places. But it says he can go everywhere. Well, there's no contradiction because Radhakund is not a place in time and space. It's a matter of consciousness. Means the Kunda of Radhakund he can go and visit. It's just like we can go there. We can go there, we can take a bath there and that. We're at Radhakund, but we're not. We're taking a bath in Radhakund and thinking, wow, I'm so fortunate, wait till I get back and tell everybody, and then they'll be thinking, oh, you're so fortunate. All right, well, for who? You know, so that means you're not actually a Radhakund. You know, so that's the point, is that means so he can be at the spiritual Radhakund, but there will be different levels of Radhakund. Right? All the gopis can go there. Like that. But those who are servants of Radharani, then they'll see it one way. Jatila and Kotila, they also go to Radhakund. But what do they see? For them, it's just a lake. You know, nice lake, nice groves, you know. Not bad, you know. Talk to your architect if you can set something up in your backyard. You know.
Hey, I like the seat under that tree there.
You know, so, but that's it. One's only seeing the external. This Radhakund is a place of the highest devotional consciousness. I mean, the highest consciousness and devotional ecstasy that there is. That's not a matter of visiting. Even he's there. That's going on. He won't see that. He knows something's going on, but he can't see that. Right? So that's just the way it goes. Is that it's the consciousness that's there. Just like you take somebody, you've seen me many times, the guests, they come in, right? They come in yelling, screaming, this, that. They come in the town hall, you know, look around like this and that, you know. What's to see here? Oh, this. Oh, okay, we've seen that. Okay, now. So were they really there? You know, you bring some nice building. And some people come and go, oh, it looks nice. You bring an architect and go, oh, this is nice. This is balanced here, this here, that color, that. So many things like that. You know, it's just different. So what they're seeing is different. So they're there, but they're not there. So it depends on. So Narad Muni is topmost. So there's means it's all transcendental, but there's still what you can see. That's why the point is only those in line with Rupa Goswami who see, who are, you know, therefore serving Radharani, serving Krishna, see that Braja Krishna that Braja Radharani sees. Others do not see. Mother Jashoda does not see that Krishna. Right? Prabhupada makes that point. Krishna himself is not that attractive. you know, he's good looking, but he's not that attractive. But when his internal potency expands, then he becomes very beautiful. You just look at a picture of Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan and a picture of Radhe Shyam. They're right next to each other. Very different. Very different. So it's just the way it is. You take, you know, you take a woman, she's on her own, she's in anxiety, not very attractive. She's happy, she's more attractive. You put her with someone she's very affectionate towards, more attractive than that. So rasa then is what actually makes the place, makes the happening. You know. You know, it's what goes on there. That is the place. So we take it as the gross, the external, but it's not, it's the mood. So we make external create the mood. But in the spiritual world, the mood is there, it creates the external. That's the difference. So there's no difference between the external and the mood. Therefore, the mood of the gopis in their body, the mood of Mother Yashoda in her body, the mood of the coward boys in their body, they're non-different. Well, here you get a difference. You create the externals, then it will help you with the mood. And someone who's very fixed in the mood then will create the externals. You know, that's why you see, let's say somebody's has good taste. They already have the taste. So then they go into an empty house and decide, okay, we'll put that here, paint this like this, put this kind of curtain, this furniture, this, that. And then they create a mood that they already have. But someone else, they go into the place and it's just empty. They don't know what to do. So they look in the magazines of people who do have the mood. And, okay, we'll put this here and that. Maybe they get it together, maybe they don't. Right? So they're trying to create the externals to get the mood. If you have the mood, it creates the externals. So when you have that mood, then you have radically. Right? Otherwise, not like that. So that's the difference. It means it's just where it's seen. He's in a different mood. So for him is just Krishna is his Lord, and Krishna is so wonderful. And he has so much great opulences. He has these opulences of sweetness. And in this sweetness, the topmost sweetness is his Vrindavan pastimes. And in that, then there's Radha Kund. Right? So he can appreciate that, but he can't taste what those others are tasting because he's viewing it from a different angle. For him, is the Lord of Vaikuntha is so wonderful that he has these very far out, special, sweet pastimes in Vrindavan. Right? Well, the Brajbasis, they see it from the other angle. As Krishna, this is Krishna. And he expands because he's Godhead and he's complete. Therefore, all aspects are within him. So therefore, he's expanded as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Right? Because God, being the ocean of rasa, also has to know everything. Right? It's just the definition of God. Knows all, sees all. Right? So therefore, you have to have a mood where he knows all season. That's Vaikuntha Bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point is consciousness. Is the actual differentiation. So it's not just good enough that you've gotten there. That's why Narottam Das Thakur says, you can't buy a ticket to Vrindavan. You got on a train to go there, you can go there. You may not be in Vrindavan. You're there in Vrindavan, but you're thinking about this one, that one, and oh, did I lock the door, or did you know this, or you know, so many things. So then we're not there.
About
Loi Bazaar. Yeah, about Loi Bazaar. The four-armed residents of Vaikuntha are selling items.
You mentioned that we can go to the Radha Kund, but we won't see actually what is going on when the pastime is going on. But do they see us when we go there, or they don't pay attention?
No, they don't. It's different platform of existence.
Like when we see the core in front of the deities, we take a darshan, actually we don't see them, they see us.
Yeah.
So when we go to Radha Kund, at least they...
If they want, if we're praying and the mood's right, then they see us. You know, We can't, just because we've gone there, we see them. That's smartness. Smartness is they chant their mantra, they do their mudra, then the deity has to come. And when they finish the puja, and because they've offered it, they have to accept. And when they finish, then they have to go. We don't work like that. So if they want, they come. They want, they stay. If they want, and when they want, they go, as they please. So it's, we work in such a way that they will be pleased to see us. They don't have to see us, but they work in such a way to be pleased to see us. Yeah. That's the point. So generally, if you follow the process according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then they will see us. If we make up our own process, then there's a good chance they won't bother. Because to be there, you have to follow authority. And if you don't follow authority, why they'll recognize? Does that make sense? Just because we've decided they should see us, and we've decided how they're going to see us, doesn't mean they're going to see us. There's a method. And that method's given by the acharyas. Does that make sense? To what degree does the practicing of bhakti yoga use jnana? Basically, it just depends on. I mean, some knowledge has to be there, because even you're dealing with the senses, then discrimination has to be there. I mean, you have to be able to tell the difference between your plate and the prasadam on top of the plate. You know, if you can't tell that difference, then it'll be really difficult. You know, or you can't tell between the cup and the plate, so you put the drink on the plate and you put the lasagna in the cup. You know, it's tough. You know, so you have to be able to tell the difference. So to some degree it's there, to that degree it's there, then that knowledge needs to be there. But the bulk of it, then it depends upon your own nature. If someone works more on sentiment, then they have to get that sentiment engaged in the Lord's service. If not, it'll be engaged in Maya. Same way as if someone has an intellect that likes to analyze, then they better use it to analyze the modes of nature, philosophy, or it's going to take them off into something else. It just, in other words, the conditioned nature must be engaged. That's why Prabhupada makes the point. The gopis were not big philosophers. They just loved Krishna. Their full sentiment was towards Krishna. That's all it takes. So it's not that you have to, this whole thing before, you know, you have to know modes and the mode of goodness and like that. That's not that important. If the sentiment is right, you will do all these things because it pleases Krishna. So without actually understanding the mode of goodness, you'll be situated in the mode of goodness and from there go to pure goodness. Because your desire for pure goodness, you'll be in goodness. So it's out of sentiment, right? The one devotee follows the rules in the kitchen because she knows it pleases Krishna. Krishna likes it clean. He likes his prasad and bhoga separated. And she wants to please him, so she does it. He likes his prasad on time, so not when inconvenience, then the offerings are on time. You know, to be on time, that she has to regulate her life. She has to be clean, so she takes her bath, she wears clean clothes, she keeps all the counters, everything nice, the utensils, everything's clean. You know, and because she knows he's a consciousness, she tries to keep herself in a good consciousness, or maybe play tapes, or discuss, or just think, or. But it's all based on sentiment, but it's according to authority. Still, what is dressed, what is cleanliness, what is offerable, what are the methods of offering, still, all that's not speculation. So that's why tradition is so important. Is because then tradition is just you do it. It engages the sentiment, engages the identity, engages the senses. And in that, the intelligence is used to discriminate which one to use at which time. Right? But why it's like that, how the cleanliness then in the clean atmosphere, then that affects the gross body, affects the subtle body then affects the consciousness. You know, if the subtle body is clean, then the mind will be clean. It will be able to more easily accept pure things, or at least pious things, and reject those which are impure. you know, and then by being so close and on that pure platform, then Krishna says the pious person surrenders to Krishna, so therefore then I'm getting myself as close as possible. So if my mind is going back and forth from transcendence to goodness, it's very easy. But if it's going from transcendence to ignorance, transcendence to passion, very hard to get it back up, because ignorance and passion catch while goodness is elevating. So it's very easy. So it's a more safe situation to situate yourself in goodness and from there attempt towards transcendence. Because if you fall back, you'll fall back just into goodness. So it's very close like that. So that is used for the person who sees it that way. Right? So they must see it that way and act that way. The person that doesn't, this is the way and like that, then it pleases Krishna. But if they only do what I was told, or that's all it is, or that's, you know, that's not good enough, pleases Krishna. If one really wants to please Krishna, one wants to know more about it, how to please Krishna. You know, like, let's say you have somebody you want to please, you know that they like sweets. Okay, they like sweets. Then you don't just think, okay, they like sweets, because there's a lot of variety of sweets. Then you want to know what kind of sweets. How do they like them? How served? How, what time of the day? With what? And what's, you know, like this, you get more and more into it. But it's still, its motive is the emotion. You know what I'm saying? So intelligence will be used, but its impetus is emotion. Well, the jnani is that emotion is used to some degree, but its impetus is jnana. But it gets very dry unless bhakti is included, because bhakti has the karma aspect, you have activity. So therefore then they'll use their intelligence on the activity. You know what I'm saying? Well, it means their impetus is the intellectual, and they engage it in activity, so then their emotions are taken care of. Well, the other way is then the emotions are the prominent, but you use the intelligence to discriminate. So either of those, if they're not based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then they'll slow down the progress. Right? If you don't know, it's just out of habit you do things, then it doesn't matter, because you have to use some medium for Krishna. But if you get to the point where you discriminate and decide, no, I prefer the modern to the Vedic, then there's an attachment to it. Or I prefer the Vedic than to the transcendental. Then there's an attachment. That will hold one back. That will slow. But if there's no attachment, you just see, I gotta serve, and what do I got? Okay, I got this. You know, I have to cook for Krishna. Okay, the only thing I know how to cook is, you know, continental preparations. So I cook those for Krishna. So there's, one will advance very quickly. Is if you develop a philosophy, no, continental cooking is as good as Indian cooking. What's the difference? Europe is there, it's a country, India is a country, so why the specialty in India? That will slow one down, because then one's attached to one's conditioning. The other one, one's not, one's just engaging one's conditioning. Like that. So then it will slow. You understand? A slight difference. That's why it said it doesn't matter. But that doesn't matter as long as it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter goes both ways. You don't care. It doesn't matter to you. Means it doesn't matter. Means you're wearing, you know, civilian clothes, and you go to the temple and someone says, hey, you want to wear a dhoti? Okay. You put it on. You know? Or, you know, here in the temple we take our shoes off. Oh, okay, excuse me, you know. I know devotees who will not take off the shoes when they go to the temple. They will not go into the temple room. They'll stand at the door with their shoes on and listen to the class. Because to them, what's the trip? You know, why should I have to take my shoes off? It's there. So that's the point. It'll slow one down. One will be stuck by shoes. You know? I mean, you look at it. What was it? One of the, you know, world, you know, leaders of a country went down because of shoes. His wife had 3,000 pairs. And if anything that you remember from that scandal of bringing down that president is his wife's shoes. So here's someone with a serious attachment to shoes, you know? So even on the material platform, you run into problems. Right, you know, it's even. Yes.
Maharaj mentioned Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu all the time. So they are always work all three together, or can we, that they work as separate also? Like you take Shastra, Shastra never lead you to ground. Shastra is always there. Like for us in ISKCON, who is the Sadhu? Sadhu is only the ISKCON gurus and the sannyasis, or Sadhu can be anybody else from outside us? Or when we say the guru and then the guru left you, in some cases three gurus left you, and then you somehow your faith breaks down, you get a little confused what is going on, and then they said Prabhupada is there for you forever, and then somebody said no, this is Ricky. Then what is the distinction between this? How to understand what is
guru, sadhu, and shastra?
Yes.
See, these are principles. See, one always asks, the Shastra is God's instruction. So that's eternal. The Veda is eternal. And then from that, there are different branches of the Vedas that are also eternal. But they are compiled. Therefore, they're called Smriti. But you always have, when in Brahma Loka, his associates in his court are the various Shastras personified. There's Bhagavad Gita personified there in the court of Brahma. Srimad Bhagavatam personified is in his court. The four Vedas personified. All the scriptures, they're all there in their personal form. And they discuss philosophy. So Brahma discusses with the scripture itself. That's what's going on in Brahma Loka. Right? So then... So they're eternal. But the point is the scripture is there to lead us to God. The God's instructions about the Lord's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, and how you interact with that person in devotion. That's what the scriptures are. For those who cannot accept the Lord as the focus, then they should at least be doing the externals. Because as we said, the externals will bring about the proper change in the subtle, in the mind. So if the Karmi and the Jnani are performing all the activities that the devotee would do, but the consciousness has not changed, but it'll bring them as close as possible. So if they contact the devotee, it will change. That makes sense? So the scriptures then are the basis of the direction on how to go. Now, one can only understand that through guru, because there are many shastras, and there's many ways you could approach the shastras, right? Just in philosophies, there's six main philosophies. And within those, there's so many sub-branches. And then you can mix them up, right? So there's a lot there. So you have to have your acharya to show what is the way of interpretation. Then the sadhus are the ones who practice that. They set the example. They show you, they instruct you in it, they inspire you in it. Right? So they may be present or not. Guru may be present or not. Shastras, you may be reading it now or remembering. So those principles are always in place. So it all goes back to Krishna. Here it mentions Narad Muni, there's no difference. Okay. Therefore, according to authorized opinion, the birth of Narada as the son of Brahma is also a transcendental pastime. His appearance and disappearance are practically on the same level as that of the Lord. Lord and his devotees are therefore simultaneously one and different as spiritual entities. They belong to the same category of transcendence. So there is a non-difference. It's all Krishna. Krishna has manifest as the scriptures, Krishna is manifest as Guru, and Krishna manifest as sadhus. So, therefore, Krishna comes. Krishna is the guru. There's not someone else who's the guru. But Krishna is the guru. But then that's taken up as then Radharani and Balaram are the next gurus. And then from there it comes down. Right? So, therefore, one's guru is only representing Krishna. He's the guru. So then, if you have a mundane conception of the guru, that he is the body, he is the gross and subtle body, and that interaction is his, you know, guru-dom, and our interaction is our disciple-dom, then we'll be dissatisfied, because if there is any break in that, then because our concept of it's on the mundane platform, we'll be affected by time and space, by the temporary aspect. But if the point is it's Krishna, it's just like this. We can look at this two ways. We want to get from here to Calcutta. We can go out the front gate, catch a bus, it'll take us directly to Calcutta. But let us say when we get to Krishnagar, the bus breaks down, then we have to get on another bus. Then it gets up to Ranagat, it breaks down, we have to take another bus, and it goes up to, Barsha, what's it called? Badasat. Breaks down, we have to catch another bus. Like that. So maybe two buses, maybe 10 buses, right? Italy, say, what's it? Buy 9, get 1 free, right? Except 9 gurus, get 1 free. So,
Walmart.
Wherever it is. But the point is who goes to Walmart and buys? Remember that also. That is my point. Snide comments against the guru are made by snide people. The gurus came from Walmart. They're cheap. But the person who goes to Walmart is also a cheap person. That's the point. The diamond, there's people there with guns. You don't get in unless you're qualified. Walmart, anyone can walk. As long as you got shoes on and a t-shirt and, you know, something longer than, you know, your copings, then you get in. So it doesn't take much qualification. So Walmart disciple gets a Walmart guru. Remember that. That should always be remembered. The person is always thinking, I'm special, and the guru's a bozo. No, bozo guru is bozo guru for bozo disciple. That should be remembered.
Without karma.
Like that's one part, but the main point is what we're trying to point out is another point. Only because you made the comment, then we make that point. So now you can look at it, wow, so many buses, this, that, I can't, you know, have trust in buses and so many things and this and that. You know, why I should take these buses, I won't bother with buses. Or you could look at it that we have the state transport system. And that state transport system got me there. It afforded me one bus, but somehow or another my luck was I had to take 5. But I got there because of the state transport system. So I can have faith in the system because the system works. There's always someone that you can go to that you can make advancement. There's never a time when there's not pure devotees on this planet. Never. Like that. They're always there. Like that. And not only that, the Shastra says you can gain knowledge even from someone who's not very qualified. So many things in the scriptures are told by someone else. Right? Ram has Lakshman hear instructions from Ravana on, you know, Dharma Shastra and managing the kingdom and all that. But he was expert. He just made that he didn't connect it to God. That was his fault. He was expert. You know? So that principle is there. The principle is there. Is that the parampara is there and they're going to come to you through the instruction. So the instructions are here. So guru is there. Now you need sadhus to you understand this and you apply it. So one of those sadhus has to connect you through the pancharatrik rites of diksha because you're conditioned. If you are conditioned, you don't need a Diksha Guru. You only need a Siksha Guru. So just you need a Diksha Guru is your fault. The Goswamis didn't need Diksha Gurus. They needed Siksha Gurus. Their initiation is through Siksha. A pure, a first class devotee, someone on the liberated platform only needs a Siksha Guru to advance. But someone below who's conditioned has to have a Diksha Guru to advance. So, right there, it's your fault that you have to have one. Yeah, so that aspect is there. Point is that the movement's here, and we see devotees, their gurus fall, they just continue following the instructions that they received there and from the sadhus, and it still works, it's still advancing. So that means the process is working. But siksha being the living force of it, therefore we have to find siksha. So that siksha is always there in the book, so that's the prime siksha, is Prabhupada's instructions. But at the same time is, we should seek out devotees who are more advanced than us. If there aren't any around, then we just stick to the books. And whatever we've learned before by some, whoever we've come in contact with, whoever's instructed us and benefited us, we move forward. But we should never have a philosophy that, well, I won't, no, I don't trust devotees, I don't this, that, you know, how can you trust yourself? You know, we made a decision to come to this material world, that was not a good decision. Bad decision. So then, how do we trust ourselves? So therefore, then we know that Prabhupada's instructions here are correct. And those persons who follow in the footsteps of his instructions and are accepted by the Vaishnava community are correct. Following that, we will advance. Right?
Very nice explanation. Yeah. The only thing is when many buses are breaking down on the way, then you really don't know what to do.
To
take, and you take a bus which is written Hare Krishna and Iskon, or you take a bus which is written something else.
Okay, well, let's see now. Your problems with your problems with the sadhus, or your problems with Prabhupada?
The bus.
The bus. Yeah. Very smart. This man is very clever. You understand?
He's a good mechanic.
He's a good mechanic, yeah. So, you understand? The principle is that you go to other mats if you have a problem with Prabhupada.
I was not meaning even mat. I was meaning the different classes in his own classes.
That's another thing.
Fully enough for me
already. Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying, outside, that means you have a problem. If you have a problem with Prabhupada, then you find those who are following nicely. See, a main problem comes up is this. It's considered a concept, it's a neophyte concept of chastity. But because of it, because of the neophyte adding it, and because of the leader supporting it, therefore there's so much difficulty. The neophyte, when they come to Krishna consciousness, then they see so many devotees, they appreciate so many devotees. Right? Then, when one of those devotees becomes prominent, they take initiation from him, then in the name of chastity, they drop any association with those others. Then, if any problem happens with that one, they have nobody. But in the Vedic, the tradition is, you have those five, or you have ten, or however many it is, you have faith in all of them, though the one is prominent, that you have the relationship, that this one, you want to have that formal relationship of Diksha Guru. And they are the prime person. But you're getting nourishment from all of them. Right? But you know how to balance it so there's no contradiction. You know what to take from who. So then, even if the Diksha Guru goes, you still have all your Siksha Gurus. Right? So you have five Gurus. One goes, you still have four. And Siksha is actually the life. Diksha you've taken from the person who the Siksha is very prominent for you. You know, or you feel more comfortable in that kind of relationship. Maybe there's another person you have great faith in, but the relationship's more informal. So, but another person is more formal, so you see that as more favorable for the Diksha relationship. So you take Diksha from this person and Siksha, and more Siksha from here. Or your Diksha, you have all your Siksha Gurus here, but your person you want to take Diksha from is from another place in the world. You see them once a year. But the other gurus, you see them all the time. So then in that way, then you don't have any difficulty. So, but in the past, it was you had many, and then as soon as there's the one, the initiation, all the others were cut out. So then those devotees always had problems. Always had problems.
Well, we must hold up everything ready. You have to go through your gurus.
So you do everything through the guru.
There's nothing left.
Yeah, but then there's sadhu. There's sadhu. Guru, sadhu, and shastra. You do it through your guru, but it doesn't mean that you weren't inspired or heard about it from the sadhus. My point is it's a very narrow window to look through. Because you just see that's the symptom of a neophyte. There's God and ourself, or God and Guru and ourselves. The sadhus then are expanded from that. So that takes time. You know? I mean, it's just like you go back into the 80s, early 80s. You had the gurus there. Things were going nice. The mission was expanding, everything. But the devotees only saw 11 people. But they were most of those people were not made devotees or were nourished on a day-to-day way by those 11. Someone else made them a devotee. But there was no consideration of those devotees and what they've done. That they had that connection to Guru and that faith in Guru, that was 100% correct. That wasn't a fault. And it's a fault to think it was. Right? And people have tried to correct that fault, and you look at the society now. Where is that dynamism? It's not there. Because without Guru, there is no dynamics. It doesn't matter. Guru is a neophyte devotee. It doesn't matter. Guru Krishna accepts him as the medium you're going through. And unless Krishna is pleased, it doesn't matter what politics you come up with or what speculations, it will never be successful. Cannot. That's why it says, you go for uttam, you don't have, go for money, you don't have, go for a neophyte. But you don't go for a guru, you don't get nowhere. That's God's opinion. Political correct or not, who cares? God is political correctness. Anything else is nonsense. And it's just sentiment. And it's political sentiment.
My last question, sorry to take your time. And what is going to be, we say the parampara, we came to up to Prabhupada, and then we see come to Prabhupada, so many other acharyas are going. What is going to be after Prabhupada?
Well, first question on parampara, what is important? What is important in parampara?
Acharya.
So that means the vapu, the body of the acharya is the important element. Sampradaya is one body connecting to another body. Right? Is that what it is? Well, then what do you do about Narottam Das Thakur and Vishwanath? There was 100 years difference. They never met physically. In fact, Narottam is initiated 4 down the line after Narottam Das Thakur. Means Narottam Das Thakur's disciple's 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 disciple was Narottam Das Thakur. I mean, was Vishwanath. So that won't work. So then what is the real connection that's there? What is the important element? Why did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur write this as our line of parampara? Because they're not Diksha disciples of each other. Narottam Das Thakur is in the line after Krishna Das Kaviraj, who's after Jiva. Right? But Krishna Das was initiated by Nityananda Prabhu. And Narottam Das Thakur was initiated by Lokanath. And Vishwanath was initiated by Radharaman Chakrabarti. And Baladev was initiated by the Madhvas. You know what I'm saying? So as you go down, it's only with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that from there, then the Diksha and Siksha lines come together. So we see as Diksha, the Diksha line isn't what's important, it's the Siksha line. Right? But there is the restriction that we take Diksha in the Siksha, within the Siksha line of the Acharya. Right? So Prabhupada is our Acharya, so we take Diksha within his Diksha, the lines coming down. But which Diksha line, it doesn't matter. What's important is the Siksha. So therefore, Siksha is not bound by time and space. So there's no, therefore, there's 100 years difference between Narottam and Vishwanath, so there's no problem. Siksha carries.
So you mean after 500 years or 5,000 years?
Yeah, on the altar will still be the same four pictures of Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaurakishwara Das Babaji Maharaj, and Jagannath Das Babaji. Yes. Yeah, and then on the side, on the table, on the tray, then will be the picture of whoever your guru happens to be. That's how it works. Right? I mean, you go to the mudwas now. Why are they called mudwas? Right? It's 700 years since mudwa.
But there has to be like 15, 20 different pictures because thousands.
No, there doesn't have to be. Who said there has to be pictures? Who said? On what authority? Pancharatra says you have to worship five before. Pancharatra says you have to worship five before. Why do we stop at Jagannath? That's five. Guru, Param Guru, Parapara Guru, Mahaguru, and Parameshti Guru. These are to be worshipped. But since Prabhupada is the founder Acharya, and he's the Guru, and his Guru is the Param Guru, is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The Parapara Guru is Gaurakishwara Das Babaji Maharaj. The Mahaguru is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the Parameshti Guru is Jagannath. So now, it's just like the Madhvas. They have Madhvacharya, they have their Guru. And they know there's a connection between their Guru and Madhvacharya, both by Siksha and Diksha. But that's good enough. We are worshipping our Acharya, and we are worshipping the previous Acharyas before him. Our connection to him, then that's nothing, because we're working, that's how the system works. When you have a founder, that's how it works. The Ramanujas, it's the same. Nimbarkas, 5,000 years, 5,000. Right?
But they don't have specific succession.
They'll have their major persons in the line, but we already have. And if somebody comes out to be prominent that is so respected by everyone that they want to make him prominent, like Vishwanath. Vishwanath was one of the devotees in the Vaishnava community at the time. He wasn't the exclusive Diksha Guru of everybody. No, he was a Diksha Guru. But because of his prominence, therefore all the Vaishnavas considered him to be the seat of understanding of, you know, the teachings of Rupa Goswami. So therefore, he's prominent. So, in the future you may find that there will be persons who will be on that stature. So then you mentioned, like even Ramanuja, you have, what's his name? Deshikacharya, Vadiraj. They're known for their, you know, means their explanations and continuing details of explanations on Ramanuja's philosophy. So they're prominent. But they're prominent for everybody. It doesn't matter who your Diksha Guru was and whether your line goes back to him or not, because that was seven generations after. Ramanuja had 74 acharyas after him to give initiation. So that means, and so one of them was prominent, but your Diksha line could have been in one of any of the others, so it doesn't matter. It's Siksha-wise it'll be prominent. Diksha-wise, never. Diksha is not the major thing. That's for caste Goswamis. They get into this. So we couldn't care less. It's what the person says, how they understand it, how they live it. That's what's important for us. It's not the body. Otherwise, you get into the body, and then you have to be born in these Goswami families. You know, not too much hair, not too little hair, not too tall, not too short, not too this, not too that. And how, you know, who would fit? You know, it'd be really hard to find a guru.
Thank you. Anything else? Anything else? Yeah. Any questions? So then after that, maybe like 300 years after, and the parampara will be extended more. So when you do puja, then you would worship Paramahamsa, then you would be Paramahamsa. Like,
the question is he's asking, what's, I guess, clarification on what we gave before about what pictures to be used in the worship, you know, after some, you know, hundreds of years. It would still be the same thing. It would still be Prabhupada, because he's the founder. Just like for the Madhvas, you have Ramanuja, you have Yamunacharya, you have like that, you go through the all ones. They're the previous acharyas. They don't bother with who's in between. They're just a connector to there. Because when you're working with the founder acharya, the instructions don't change. the instructions of Natha Muni were, may have been different in presentation from Yamanacharya and different from Ramanuja. But with Ramanuja, up to today, they don't change. Your sadhu's understanding of how you apply them, that is time, place, and circumstance, based on tradition and what others have done and other great personalities and their guru has done and his guru and like that. So tradition is seen. But the instruction, so Prabhupada is the instructing guru. Everyone else is assisting him in that. Diksha-wise, somebody gives diksha, they are their diksha disciple. But if they want to claim to be in the line of Prabhupada, they have to be siksha-wise in line. Because if they're not siksha-wise in line, then they're out. They can take their disciples, go somewhere else. Diksha-wise, yes, they can claim. Siksha-wise, they can't claim them. That's why if the guru goes weird and starts coming up with strange philosophy, because they have taken initiation in Prabhupada's line, and if they've accepted this person because he speaks what Prabhupada speaks, therefore when he stops to speak, they don't have to follow him. They're not obliged because he's the Diksha Guru. No obligation. So when he says, I'm leaving the society, you all come with me, they don't have to go anywhere. They're under no obligation. In fact, if they go, they're in line. Like that. Because they're from this line. So we're taking initiation from somebody because they speak what Prabhupada speaks. They make what Prabhupada says clear to us. We read it, we get something. This person speaks, we get more. So they become our siksha guru. Then that expands. We may have many. You know? So many inspiring devotees. And then from that, then somebody becomes prominent and we take diksha from them. But that's not the point. Prominent point. Prominent point is we must do it. But it's not which one. So like you go into the supermarket and you need a toothbrush, right? There's 50 toothbrushes there. You just have to pick one. It doesn't matter which one. They're all bona fide toothbrushes. Right? You just pick one. So then it's done. It doesn't matter which one. You know, it's like you need a brick. Okay, you're making brick wall. You pick one. It's a brick. It's bona fide, it does all the work of a brick, has every qualities of a brick, it'll do the brick work, so you can pick this one up. So it matches. There's it. Like that. So one doesn't have to worry. If they're bona fide, you can understand them, they can understand you, it relates, it works, that means it's a good connection. Because what has to work is the siksha. Generally it goes by, this one smiled at me, he's my diksha guru. And then later on when he gives instruction and says, hey, why are you doing this? Oh, my relationship with my diksha guru, it's different, it's changed. But this one smiled at me. So, hey, I took first from this one, but I don't want to take second from him because he doesn't smile anymore. He gives instructions. But this one still only smiles. I want to take second from him. We laugh, but it's that cheap. So even what did you say? Walmart, even that's pretty good. I try, you know, Dollar General.
Toothbrush breaks next day. Yeah,
it's like that, you know. Fire and die. Does that make sense?
My point was independent. Who would actually deal with Diksha Guru would be Diksha Guru, whoever is Diksha Guru. But who would deal with that as a Paramount Guru? That would be Prabhupada?
Who's the point is you didn't catch the point. You're still asking who's the Parama Guru.
But
the point is what is important in our line, the siksha or the diksha? It's the siksha. So therefore, the siksha is coming from Prabhupada. So Prabhupada is the guru. It's not that your guru who you took initiation from, he's the guru, and Prabhupada just happens to be his. No, Prabhupada is the guru. Your guru is representing him. When it comes to diksha, then that person is your guru. And he just happens to be in Prabhupada's line, which is supposed to be. But there are so many coming in Prabhupada's line, thousands of disciples. You know, so it just happened to be this one. But this siksha, you are able to connect with the siksha, that's Prabhupada's siksha, or what he's giving is Prabhupada's siksha. So Prabhupada's the guru. That's why I made the point before, you have to understand Krishna's the guru. If you can understand that and get that from there to Prabhupada, you can get that from Prabhupada to your guru. So therefore, what's in between isn't important. But if your guru's guru happens to show up, then you have to offer double respect to that guru. You know what I'm saying? So that's etiquette. You know? That's dealing with the fapu aspect. But on the vani aspect, it's your guru. It means, you know, one generation after Prabhupada, it's your guru and Prabhupada. 10 generations after Prabhupada, it's your guru and Prabhupada. 100 generations after Prabhupada, it's your guru and Prabhupada. Because they're representing Prabhupada. They're the Vaya media. So what's in between isn't important. It's important that it was bona fide, it was Vaya media. But what I'm saying, as far as the Pancharatric worship, it's not. Because here it's Pancharatra mixed with the I think it's called the Acharya Purush system. I think that's what the Ramanujas call it. Means you have to have the Acharya who represents the Lord. He sets the standards for everybody for there as long as his mission lasts. Prabhupada said 10,000 years is his mission. For 10,000 years, Prabhupada will be the Acharya. There'll be people who come up who will revive and strengthen and give, you know, inspiration. But it'll always be there inspiring to follow Prabhupada. Deshikacharya, you know, they didn't take it off separately. Their whole point was Ramanuja. Right? They were trying to strengthen the faith and following in Ramanuja's teachings. Right? They didn't then take it into a different direction. Otherwise, you end up with something different, right? So one has to be very, very careful. And so that's the system. Subtle, but that's the point. Is if you want to get somewhere, subtlety is where it's at. Gross doesn't always work. You know, of course, if you put enough butter, then it works. Remember, one famous cook said, "If you don't have bhakti, put more butter. Then the devotees will like it." Yeah.
Well, sometimes there's some contradiction in scriptures.
Contradictions in scriptures.
Scriptures and what Guru says and what Sadhu says.
Uh-huh.
Then what happens is people do some interpretations. And then without taking proper clarifications, there's a tendency to speculate.
Mm-hmm.
And due to the speculation, then due to our false ego, we may convince ourselves that whatever we have speculated is the perfect thing. Mm-hmm. And that may be wrong. So in mm-hmm. such cases, what we should do?
Well, first means the question is then what do we do when there's seemingly a contradiction of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and we work it out ourselves and we're very convinced of it. See, the thing is even our methods to work it out must be based on Scripture. So Scripture, first of all, says there's no contradiction. So just the concept that there is a contradiction, we worked it out. There's no contradiction. We'll call it a contradiction means our intelligence can't put the two together. So even sometimes it will be referred to that an acharya or, you know, a kshatriya is one who can work out the contradictions in scriptures. They're only perceived as because they're not there. The kshatriya understands there aren't any. Therefore, they can find the root. The person who thinks they're contradictory can't find it. You know? Does that make some sense? So that's the point, is that if that's understood, it's still it has to go through there. And it has to go through your acharya. So what he says on the matter, then that's how you approach it. Right? Like if he says, due to envy, then we fall from the spiritual platform into the material world. So then we find in between scriptures or acharyas, there's a seemingly a different presentation of that. Then we understand, one, there's no contradiction, so there isn't a difference. Two, is that we look at it through our acharya and then try to understand it from there. Right? Does that make sense? You know, which is it? The guy's a cook, so he looks for a job at a restaurant. Or the guy's a restaurateur, so he looks for a cook to cook for. Which is the correct vision? Which one is right and the other is absolutely wrong? Which one?
Both are
wrong.
Both are right.
Both are right. So that's the scriptures. Point is you want to make business, then you have to have a code. You want to get a job or use your skills or express your art, you got to find a restaurant. So it depends upon what your approach is. Therefore, the scriptures are being spoken to different persons at different time, places, and circumstances. Therefore, different examples will be given. You know, the story will be told in a particular way. You know, like the story is being told about Mandukya Muni. Therefore, there just happens to be some leper came by and touched his body, and the smell of it woke him from his consciousness, and then he got all upset, and then they came and took him off the pole, and the king was very sorry, and this, and then Mandukya Muni went to Yamaraj and said, "Hey, what's going on here?" And, "Well, because when you were five, you killed an ant, and hey, you know, anyone under, you know, it's not adult, you know, is not responsible for their activities. It goes to the parents, their karma. So therefore, I curse you because you miss justice. So therefore, you take birth as a shooter. The shooter doesn't know justice. So he takes birth as a vidura. So our purpose is to show how vidura comes. So we don't get into the leper. We're trying to show what a chaste wife is. Then Mandukya Muni just happens to be the chaste wife is carrying her husband back from the prostitute that she went and served to get her favor so that she would even see her husband. And she's carrying this leper by, and because Mandukya Muni, you know, gets the smell and all that, and then he curses, you know, he thinks he's in his ashram, so he curses whoever is defiling his ashram, you know, then will die before the sunrise. And this is at the Brahma Muhurta. So then the wife says, "The sun's not rising today." It's that simple. And so it doesn't. And so then Lord Brahma and Vishnu, everybody has to come and say, "Okay, by the power of your chastity, even Brahma and the sun, nobody can stop. But if you can persist, your whole universe will die." And then she says, "That's your problem. You're Brahma. You're worried about the universe. I'm a wife. I'm my business, my husband. So I keep my husband alive. You keep the universe alive." Like that. So Brahma says, "Well, okay, because her chastity is more powerful than his potency." So therefore he says, "Okay, well, cut a deal here. So your husband's, you know, a leper and, you know, in bad shape and all that. So you, knowing that a chaste wife is always interested in the welfare of her husband, so therefore let him die, right? So that, you know, the sun can move, he'll die, and we'll immediately bring him back to life in a fresh, youthful, you know, healthy body that will, like this." She thinks about it, because she's not interested in sense gratification, but she thinks for the husband, she doesn't mind, he's a leper, okay, whatever, he's the husband, she's doing her service, but for him it will be nice. So then she says, "Okay." So Mandukya Muni is just a, you know, two sentences in that story. And in the story of Mandukya Muni and Yamaraj and Vidura, then the chaste wife and the leper is one sentence in the story. So then one can see it's contradictory. You might think it's contradictory. No, it depends on what you're doing. You know, if you're showing how, you know, have to be careful in justice, then that's one story. If you're showing how one is chastity, it's another story. But it's the same intertwined stories. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, there's no contradiction in the scriptures. It just depends upon who they're speaking to at what time for what. So knowing that, then you get back to why are they speaking this? What's behind it? What's the cause? It's a conversation. Everything in the scriptures is a conversation, except for the sutras. Right? But all of the scriptures are conversations. Somebody's speaking to somebody. You know? So why are they speaking it? What's the question? Why is it being asked? What's the point being made? Therefore, then you know what it is, so there's no contradiction. You know? It's just like the person is so attached to the rules, so you're telling him, no, it's not the rules that are important, it's the devotion that's important. Right? And the person who, you know, it just doesn't want to follow. It's totally independent. Hates being restricted by anything. They just want to be independent. They're just so. Then you have to tell the rules are important. You don't follow the rules. How are you going to please God? It's God's rules. So then you say, "Hey, this is contradictory." One said, "You know, the rules aren't important." The other one says, "You don't follow his rules. You don't go back to God then." You say the contradiction. Because the point is it's both. You follow the rules to please God. If you only follow the rules not to please God, that's useless. If you're only saying you're pleasing God and not following any form that God will can recognize, you know, then what's, how do you prove your love? You love more yourself than you do God, because you follow your rules, not God's. Does that make some sense? So therefore it looks to be contradictory, but it's not like that. So that's the principle. You know, is that if that's understood, then there's no contradiction. And then also as the sadhus, then according to your situation, I'll say one thing for one person, another for another, depending upon who they are and why they're approaching. You know, one's approaching, one's presenting some point of right and wrong, but you got a political motive, they may talk about politics. Or in it, you're wrong, so they may talk about you. And later on you say, hey, you know, I told him about this injustice and he didn't even talk about it. He just told me I was wrong. He blamed me. But it was the other person. This is very common in the political circle. But you needed to hear that because you have a problem that you don't understand actually the application of justice. You say, okay, you point out this is wrong. That's correct. But you can't see actually what the purpose of the rule is. That's missed. Okay? Yes. Narad Muni. Yes. Yes. Breaks. Yes. So how does that work? It seems like a contradiction. Narad Muni is singing Radha Krishna's name as a devotee of them, but he's known as a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Because he sees the pastimes of Radha and Krishna as Lord Vishnu's pastimes. Lord Vishnu is performing these pastimes. That's how they see it. So we don't say it's wrong, but we just know that Krishna is the origin. Krishna is expanded as Vaikuntha Pandu. But it's not wrong to see it the other way. Because in a day of Brahma, out of 1,000 appearances of Krishna, one of them is Swayam Krishna from Goloka Vrindavan. The other 999 are expansions of Vishnu. So it's not wrong. But the original is still Krishna from Braj. You know, and ecstasy is ecstasy, but there's 10 levels of ecstasy. So Mahabhav, it doesn't mean it's Mahabhav. Right? It says in Nectar Devotion also, only the cowherd boys that are in confidential rasa with Krishna and the gopis in general can taste Mahabhav. They're the ones that can taste it. Others taste below that. It tells what level each rasa goes up to in bhava. Narad Muni is Madhu Mangal. Yes. So when he's tasting the internal pastimes of Radha Krishna, that's as Madhu Mangal, not as Narad Muni. Right? Just like Krishna expands as Vaikunthapati. So Radharani expands as Lakshmi. The Lakshmi can't get into the rasa dance. She can't become a gopi because her mentality, she is the wife of Vaikunthapati. So Narad Muni is the mood of Madhu Mangal when he is worshipping Lord Vishnu. So he'll be a devotee of Radha and Krishna, but it's expanded from there. But he's a devotee of Radha and Krishna in Braj, that's his Madhu Mangal. See, the point is these aren't intellectual. These aren't a matter, it's a matter of the mood. Do you understand the mood or not? Okay, you have one woman. A young boy comes up to her and says, Mommy. Her husband comes up to her and says, Sweetheart. And the father says, you know, daughter. Which is she? One's right, all the others are wrong. Which is she? So can you accommodate all three at once? What would happen if she was in the room with her father, her husband, and her son? What would she do? You know, now you play the heavy music and turn it expletive for her. What will Ed and Davy Dossie do? Will she have an emotional breakdown? You know what I'm saying? So we can accommodate overlapping points here. And when she's with the husband, and how she deals with the son is the same as the husband, right? That pat on the head for the son is exactly the same pat as the husband, right? Yes? Yes? No? No. Okay. So how is that accommodated? So then, but the point is that she's in one body. But in the spiritual realm, they're in three different bodies. So as Madhu Mangal, he's in that mood and he worships Radha and Krishna in Braj. And in another body, in that mood, he worships the Lord of Vaikuntha as he expands his Radha and Krishna. So there's no problem. So it's one of those things, you catch it or you don't. Because it's not a matter of intellectualizing. It's one of those things, you know. It's just like, you know, the girl catches how to behave in different situations or she doesn't. She's with a friend, she behaves one way. When an adult walks in, she behaves in another way. When they leave the house and go out on the street, she behaves in another way, even with those same friends. She catches that, then she knows what's going on. She doesn't. You understand? So it's a matter of training. Right? So it's not a matter of logic. It's a matter of the mood. Because it's relationships with other people. You know? Because if you get stuck on that one, then you know, what happens when you run into other things? You know, what about Garuda and Radharani's brother? You know what I'm saying? You're going to have problems. So that's the whole point, is everybody expands, because there's only Radharani. Now, what are you going to do about this one? There's only Radharani and there's only Krishna. Krishna expands as Balaram and then all the Vaikuntha Murtis. And Radharani expands as all the internal potency. So how do you work that out, Lakshmi and Radharani? Or Lakshmi and Lalita, or Lakshmi and Shakti. How do you know what I'm saying? In other words, it's just they have different bodies for the different moods, and we're stuck in one. So we're trying to apply our concept of limited by time and space and our experience on them. They don't have that problem. They expand in that mood, and it's a different form of different pastimes, different name, different everything. So this one goes on and that one goes on. They're two different ones. But at the same time, they're the same person. So that's... Dhrantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Jai Gopi.